turn the microphone on and then call the meeting to order. The minutes were sent out on the computers. Does anyone have any changes or corrections to the minutes? And if not, could we have a motion to approve?
I'll move.
Second? We heard the motion, the second, to approve the minutes as printed. Is there any discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. Minutes are approved. The first thing on the agenda is the investment board recruitment status. And it says someone from the investment board, but Darren, you're going to do that. Okay, before you start though, since it's been a few months now since we met real frequently there for a while until we had something in place to get the money flowing into some investments. And, you know, I think in our investment strategy that we've adopted so far, there's probably some things in there that everyone could find to disagree with or pick at. But I think there's a lot of good things in it too. And I think the committee should be commended for really working diligently last fall as we were facing the situation of all this money coming in and really no place to put it where it belonged. And we got something in place, and I think we made a very good accomplishment there. We haven't lost money. We found issues in the budget stabilization fund with the bond fund, that some things that I think are better now than they were a year ago when we first started digging into this. And I just wanted to take a few minutes before we start on the rest of the agenda to commend all the members of the committee on what I think is a job pretty well done to this point. And I hope we can keep that same diligence up as we move on here and make more decisions on how to invest this money for the long term. So thanks, everybody.
What?
And we'll do roll call.
Chairman Chrisman?
Yeah.
Senator Dotsenrad?
Here.
Representative Kempinick?
Here.
Representative Weiler?
Here.
Ms. Sharp?
Here.
Mr. Hardmeyer?
Here.
Ms. Strombeck, on behalf of Tax Commissioner Fong?
Here.
We have a quorum. And for the first item on the agenda, we'll welcome our new interim chief investment officer. If I have the title wrong, you can tell us, Darren Schultz.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the board, my name is Darren Schultz, and I'm the interim chief investment officer with the North Dakota Retirement and Investment Office. Today, I'd like to, first of all, provide you with a status report on the recruitment of a permanent executive director and CIO, as well as address the investment history and returns of both the legacy fund and the budget stabilization fund. And I'd like to conclude with some general discussion regarding the overall investment policy that's currently in place to include a discussion of the mission objectives and constraints of the legacy fund, and finally wrap up with some concluding thoughts with regards to asset allocation. In front of you, you have a presentation. I'd like to start on page 3 and provide you with an update with regards to the State Investment Board's selection of a permanent executive director and CIO. As you may know, John Geisinger, executive director and chief investment officer from our office, recently announced his resignation last month so that he and his wife could relocate closer to family in Connecticut. And his last day at our office was May 31st. The State Investment Board has established a committee to lead the search for a permanent replacement. This search committee includes representation from a variety of SIB client groups, to include Lieutenant Governor Drew Wrigley, State Treasurer Kelly Schmidt, State Land Commissioner Lance Gaby, PERS Trustee Mike Sandel, and finally TFFR Trustee Bob Toso, excuse me. Right now, the discussion of the job duties is in its early stages, and we don't currently have a timeline for hiring a replacement. However, the board expects to utilize the services of an executive search firm from which they will be selected using a competitive bid process as required by state law. In the interim, the State Investment Board has appointed Fay Kopp as the Executive Director and myself as the interim Chief Investment Officer. Fay is currently Deputy Executive Director of the North Dakota Retirement and Investment Office and Chief Retirement Officer for the TFFR Pension Plan. And Fay has been with the office for over 24 years in various positions. I joined the investment office in January. I have 15 years of investment management experience, 20 years of total industry experience. Prior to joining the investment office, I oversaw the retirement assets, foundation assets, and non-qualified assets for WellPoint, a health insurance company in Indianapolis, Indiana. I also served for 10 years at the Retirement Systems of Alabama, which is Alabama's public pension system, where I served as in the final 6 years as Chief Investment Officer, and also I served as a portfolio manager and equity analyst. I'd also highlight Connie Flanagan, Fiscal and Investment Officer. She has been with our office for over 20 years, and she has considerable institutional knowledge and experience. And the bottom line message I'd like to convey today is that the funds entrusted to SIB are in good hands with the existing staff, money managers, and our investment consultant. And with that, I am happy to open it up to questions, should there be any.
John previously was both the executive director and CIO.
That's correct.
So now Fay is taking on the interim executive director and your interim CIO.
That's correct.
Okay. Representative Kempinick.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Darren, things were kind of changing in that office. You know, we wanted to have basically two investment officers, you know, somebody that passed through. Is that, where did you stand when you came in January? Were you like the deputy investment officer would have been your title when you came in January?
Mr. Chair, yes, I joined as deputy chief investment officer, and John held a position executive director and chief investment officer.
Okay. And that's, you like to stay there, or is there, or are you looking at just two, you know, I mean, is that where are you at there as far as your situation right now? You're the interim and stuff on it. That's why I'm just kind of curious of where you applied for this job too then and stuff.
As it stands, I am stepping in as interim CIO, and ultimately I envision I would step back to my deputy CIO role once a replacement is found.
Okay. Whatever happens and stuff on it. Okay,
indeed.
That's basically what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions on the CIO or executive director positions? Well, then let's move on to the 110 item, and keep Darren working up there, and you can tell us about how we're doing so far on these two funds.
Sure. Mr. Chair, I'd like to refer the board to page 4 of your presentation, in which we have a summary of the investment history and returns for the legacy fund. This is information, preliminary information, through May 31st of this year. This table shows the new monies that have come into the legacy fund since its establishment in September of 2011. We've had deposits in the amount of approximately $352 million, and we've seen a net increase inception to date of approximately $1.1 million, which represents the interest earnings that have accumulated as well as the capital appreciation over that amount of time.
Is the 352, that was ending with the May deposit? June isn't in yet, is it?
Just May deposit, Mr. Chair. We ended the month total assets of the legacy fund of $353 million. At the very bottom of this table, you can see the total returns inception to date over the last eight months, which have been approximately 0.9%, 0.88% to be exact. That compares favorably with our policy benchmark, which returned 0.21%. And just so you know, the policy benchmark is the Barclays 1 to 3 year government index. On the following...
Are these numbers net of costs of management fees?
These are net returns, Mr. Chair. On page 5, we have a similar table which summarizes the Budget Stabilization Fund investment history and returns going back to its initial funding in September 2005. I'll just focus on the last fiscal year through May. We received approximately $61.4 million in deposits fiscal year to date, and we've seen a net increase of $6.6 million, and we've ended the fiscal year 2012 as of May 31st with total assets of approximately $394 million. Below you can see net returns since inception versus the benchmark, which is the T-bill rate of return. The average annualized return for the Budget Stabilization Fund is 2.44%, comparing favorably to a T-bill return of 1.97%. I'd like to segue into a discussion regarding the legacy fund as it relates to the current asset allocation as requested by the chair. The next three slides I thought merited some a review again.
Before you move on to that, with the Budget Stabilization Fund, last fall, there was investments in bond funds that some of this committee didn't like, and it seemed Mr. Geisinger probably didn't like that well either. But the Pru-Alpha one was just something that we needed to hold for a while. Do we still hold that? And tell us about especially that one, but the size of bond funds in general.
I believe you're referring to some of the legacy bank loan investments that were formerly in invested by Prudential, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Chair. Is that what you are?
No, I'm thinking they were budget stabilization.
I know that. Forgive me for pausing on that. I'm aware of some legacy bank loan investments which were transferred into a mandate currently managed by Babson, and those investments are, if I'm not mistaken, currently in a runoff mode where they're just being allowed to mature. And I don't know if that's the direction you're headed, Mr. Chair.
Well, we're probably neither one 100% clear, so we'll just leave that for now and
figure happy that out to, if, you know,
and that's fine.
Okay. On page 6 and page 7 and 8, these are some slides that were originally presented by Cowan Associates, the State Investment Board's general investment consultant, at the October 2011 advisory board meeting. I have included these slides because I think they do a very good job at highlighting industry best practice for investment fiduciaries. You know, faithful adherence to this process, I believe, ensures that the overall investment strategy is effectively managed. And as you go from left to right, this is a continuum of decisions that fiduciaries make, from the assessment of the current position to actually designing an optimal portfolio, which in turn crystallizes into developing a formal investment policy. And then as you move towards the right, you get more into the implementation and monitoring process. I'd like to just hone in on the current position because I think it raises some important issues as the board looks at trying to find really the optimal asset allocation for the legacy fund. And there are a number of considerations which I will go into greater detail as we proceed through this presentation, but one important consideration is just the overall mission and objective of the legacy fund. That also dovetails into a assessment of the willingness and the ability to accept risk, to tolerate risk. And then there are other considerations as far as what the performance objectives of the legacy fund are, to include aspects of spending and funding policy that's envisioned for this pool of assets. So if I could, I'd like to proceed and talk a little bit further about the first step in this fiduciary process, which is the determination of what the overall investment goals and objectives are. You know, when you look at different institutional pools of assets, there can be a variety of different goals and objectives. When I think of a bank, I think of a goal of trying to achieve a net interest spread over the cost of funds. That's one goal. An insurance company may look to maximize return as well as grow the surplus in order to pay on claims. An endowment has to strike a balance between trying to maximize current income and also at the same time try to preserve the real purchasing power of the assets over a very long period of time. And a consideration in this identification of the goals and objectives is, you know, what is the risk tolerance and how does that relate to the investment goal? Are they incommensurate or are they aligned? And I think this is a slide which I think it's important for the advisory board to consider as we discuss the optimal asset allocation for the legacy fund assets.
Well, where are we at there? Excuse me for interrupting. You know, like on kind of like on say like on a curve, where are we at, you know, versus, you know, where we're at our goals versus our tolerance, where are we at? Pretty flatlined right now, aren't we? As far as, you know, just kind of visualizing, you know, because our risk is fairly low on the legacy fund anyways. See, that was one of the questions we had when we were dealing with this to start with, was, you know, how far up do we want to go up on that risk curve, you know, versus what we're trying to establish on a goal. And that was getting to be the challenge, is there just wasn't a lot of willingness to take much risk involved in it. And you know, it'd be nice to see though what some scenarios, you know, it'd be nice to see some computer models, should we say, or something where, you know, what we could do, or what, you know, some projections what could happen if you did this and stuff on it, you know, without, before we ever do something, that, because that's going to be one of the big challenges to try to manage this, is to we aren't going to burn up any capital on it, and so that's going to be one of the big challenges.
I think you're alluding to a very important point is as far as there being further study, deeper analysis as far as various scenarios, as far as, you know, what the spending objectives are, what's the funding policy going forward. These oil and gas production and extraction revenues are, I mean, we're getting positive surprises, and we certainly need to look at what are these cash flows going to be, what's going to happen after this five-year accumulation phase when we hit 2017. What kind of spending are we going to have at that time? You know, is there going to be a 15% per biennium spending rate, or is that ad hoc? There are a lot of variables beyond just the investment policy, but this slide, I think, shows how a study between these three key components is necessary in order to develop a asset allocation and investment policy. There is consultants provide studies for endowments where they, you know, look at various asset mixes, spending and fundraising targets to develop a well thought out investment strategy. And you're alluding to something that I think is very important. I think the advisory board should consider as we look at the current policy and perhaps chart a different path.
Well, committee and Darren, you know, that's been the thing. We're going to have a legislative session coming up here in 8 months or whatever it is today, less than that, I guess. But anyways, you know, that's where, because, you know, this is an advisory, you know, we can't legislate, but we can get some direction of what we want to legislate, you know, because there is some questions, and I think there's going to have to be some answers, because there is, people have got different ideas of what this fund should be used for, you know, when it does come out, and I think that's going to be something that we're probably going to have to get during the session, is going to have to get, and I don't know if this committee is going to want to deal with that or not, or get some type of, you know, to get some type of idea of what, like, the legislative body would like to see it go to, you know, because I think that's one of the things that's elusive right now. We've got what was put in the Constitution of what can happen to this fund, but it really, you know, the legislature can access it, you know, there's an access way, but, you know, it really isn't, and I think that's what the legislature is going to have to figure out is, do we want to, are we going to use it for budgetary, just budgetary stopgap type, are we going to try to build it and use it, you know, go towards the Alaska type fund, you know, scenario, or there's other, you know, New Mexico, Colorado are doing it, Wyoming, they're using it for different things too, and I think that's, you know, I think the goal is something, you know, right now the goal was just to manage it, basically, it wasn't, you know, but that there is going to be a point in time of where there's going to have to be a use for it too, and so that's I think we're going to have to work on that.
Mm-hmm.
I know, and that I was kind of frustrated about that last fall because there wasn't, you know, there's a goal of what we're trying to do. It's a legacy fund, but I think there's got to be a use for it, or it's going to come under criticism. And is there even making enough, or it isn't? It's getting blown. You know. I think we're going to have to get some type of little better parameters around what we're trying to do with it, you know. I mean, like I said, the meetings last fall were basically to preserve it and get it invested is what kind of,
mm-hmm.
But I think we got to have some type of idea. I don't know.
Continue.
Mr. Chair. If I can move through the slides, I think this may raise some further observations as it relates to you know, the asset allocation and investment policy. Moving on to page 9, I put together a slide which touches on the issue of what is the purpose of the assets, and that is essentially defining the liability, which the liability is simply a future outlay of money, and for an endowment, spending is considered a liability. And as it relates to the legacy fund, this liability is mostly undefined. There are some parameters. In approximately 5 years, the interest earnings will be transferred to the general fund at the end of each biennium. Additionally, up to 15% of the principal may be spent, subject to a supermajority vote. But beyond that, it's there isn't a lot of clarity as far as, you know, these future outlays from the legacy fund. But this, on the other hand, is not, it's not unique to the legacy fund. When I look at a number of endowments, they have to deal with liabilities that are not crystal clear, like a pension fund, for example, having the need to pay benefit payments. An endowment, in most cases, has a perpetual time horizon, and the liabilities isn't clear, but that time horizon does grant them really a lot of flexibility. That's kind of the paradoxical aspect of an endowment, is that the time permits them a lot of flexibility in how they invest their assets. And that was just the point I would like to convey, is that this is not a unique challenge. I'd like to talk a little bit about this fiduciary best practice process. as it relates to the goals and objectives and constraints that are just embedded within the development of an investment policy statement. I'd like to start, first of all, with risk tolerance. There's a ability to take risk, and there's also a willingness to take risk. I see the ability is the factual aspect of risk tolerance, whereas willingness is the emotional aspect of risk tolerance. And as far as the ability to tolerate risk, there are a number of general rules of thumb in the development of risk tolerance, one of which is the importance of this funding to the sponsoring entity. The greater its importance to an operating budget, for example, the less the ability to tolerate risk.
Before you go on to the other points, Representative Weiler has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Darren, apologize for interrupting him. It seems like each time we have these committee meetings, somebody keeps going back to the fact that this fund, we need to determine what the future outlays are, what is the purpose of this fund, what kind of spending requirements do we have with this fund. And I'm a little, I guess I don't quite understand why that's important to your position, and quite frankly, our position. I mean, our responsibility with this committee is to basically set the risk tolerance and some other associated things with that, and then you guys are supposed to do the best job you can do, get the most money out of this fund. But as far as I think there were some comments made earlier about questions about spending requirements, and I don't understand why that has anything to do with your position, your duty, and our duty. The spending requirements from this fund have absolutely nothing to do with what we're doing here. That's the legislative decision. I know that Representative Kempinick said that, but I don't understand why that question keeps coming up. And I mean, does it matter if the legislative body determines that while we want more money from this than less money? I mean, is it gonna matter in how you guys do your job? I don't understand why that question keeps coming up, and I don't mean to be rude, but it comes up all the time. And we want as much interest and earnings from this fund as we can possibly get, and that's, you know, why we're here. But why does it matter?
Mr. Chair,
what the legislators are going to do, decide to do.
Representative Weiler, my understanding is that the advisory board is charged with making recommendations to the State Investment Board as it relates to the asset allocation for the legacy fund. And the State Investment Board has the ultimate fiduciary responsibility for the legacy fund. You know, as part of determining that asset allocation, the spending is a important component. It can't be disregarded. It does feed into the development of what is an appropriate asset allocation for this pool of assets. But recognizing that there isn't a lot of visibility as to how that spending is going to play out, but it's something that needs to be considered as far as developing an appropriate asset allocation.
Continue.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess my question is that in 2017, when the interest and earnings begin to be deposited in the general fund, and I don't know what kind of numbers we're talking about, but if $50 million from this fund, from interest and earnings, gets deposited in the general fund, then that's how much money is available from this fund to spend for the legislators. If it's $100 million that gets deposited in this fund, from this fund into the general fund, then it's $100 million, and the legislators have that much more money in the general fund to use for their budgeting purposes for the next biennium. And you know, forgive me if I'm way off base, but I just don't understand, what does it matter whether it's 50 or 100? We want it to be the most it can be without understanding our risk tolerance that's involved. But I shouldn't matter whether it's 50 or 100 or 25 million or 250 million. But that has nothing to do with, and so I, anyway. You can touch on that if you'd like, but I'm done.
Mr. Chair, Representative Weiler, the point I was trying to convey is that the near-term liquidity needs are low, and beyond 2017, they will remain fairly low, moderate perhaps, and that does grant us some flexibility in how we invest these assets. That was the point I was trying to articulate. But liquidity is a consideration, but the legacy fund has the luxury of not having any near-term liquidity needs over the next 5 years.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this may be a question for anybody on the committee or even Darren, but I would hope that the legislative body of 2015 or 17 doesn't look to this fund and say, "Well, we need that $50 million more out of this fund from interest and earnings." So therefore, you know, we need. You know what I mean? And I don't. It is what it is. We want to get the most out of this fund that we can, provided our risk tolerance, and the spending habits of the legislative body. Has, in my opinion, should have absolutely nothing to do with how you guys perform your job in this. Liquidity in 2017, unless something really bad happens, the problem in North Dakota is not we need more money. That's not the problem. It's not going to be the problem, that we need more money to spend. So I would hope that that isn't looked upon that way.
I hope, I agree with you and hope that you're right, that that's not what the legislature is doing in 2017, but already this spring, you know, there's been people that have talked about wanting to tap into some of it, but.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Kaepernick.
And committee. And that's why I brought, you know, one of the things we had just a week ago was a big issue on Measure 2. And see, that's the thing is this, I got a feeling that this is going to come under, and I heard it on the radio this morning too, we have $5 billion, you know, I mean, you keep hearing these numbers and pretty soon perception becomes reality with what goes on, and that's why I brought this up, was what is, I think the legislature, and I'm not talking about this committee because this is way beyond what this committee is going to do. But I really think that there's going to have to be some type of something done in the legislature this next session to kind of address this fund, because the way the Constitution is written right now, we basically just invest it and leave it set for till 2017. But I got a feeling that there's going to be a lot of expectations coming out of this, whether we're doing it or not. You know, I mean, with the climate we're in right now, I think, like the chairman said, we've probably done about as good as we're going to get with the climate, you know, and versus what our risk is, I think. But I got a feeling there's going to be a lot of
Monday morning quarterbacking on this coming, going forward with it, and that's one of the things that I you know, I'm just trying to...
I think we're kind of getting into the 240 committee discussion, though.
Yeah, okay, yeah, we're...
If there's nothing, let's let Darren finish, or, but if there's questions that need to be addressed as we go, please let me know, but continue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Referring back to page 10, the ability and willingness to take risk, I believe I left off on the dependence of funding. I'd like to move on to the second point regarding spending. Generally, low spending requirements do imply a greater ability to tolerate risk. Extremely volatile spending implies a lesser ability to tolerate risk. High contributions relative to spending, this is generally relating just to the organic cash flows, looking beyond the investment earnings. This generally implies a greater ability to take risk. And then finally, time horizon. The luxury of time permits greater ability to weather short-term fluctuations in order to achieve long-term objectives. The willingness to take risk, there's a vast field of literature which is dedicated to behavioral finance, which is the study of how we as humans behave when dealing with money. And there are many, a variety of biases. I just threw together three which are very common, one of which is loss aversion. The pain of loss can sometimes be greater than the pleasure of gains. There's also a bias called regret avoidance, where we may decide to postpone taking action because of the fear that a course may be less than optimal. And then finally, something called recency bias. This is where we tend to weigh recent events more heavily than events that have occurred in the past. One example is the 90s bull market and double-digit interest rates of the early 80s. Those seem to be ushered well back in our minds as we feel the psychological weight of the 2008-2009 experience. I just wanted to highlight those, just some of the things that do play into the risk tolerance. Moving forward, another fund objective is just the return. In order to provide, you know, permanent asset base for funding, there's often attention paid to preserving the real purchasing power of assets. And this has some implications, two of which I've listed here. One is the balancing the need for current income in the short run with protecting the principal, protecting the corpus over a long period of time. Also, then another important consideration, the return objective is just ensuring that the assets aren't affected by the ravages of inflation. When looking at a pool of assets that has you know, endowment type aspects, it's typical to look at a total return approach, where the not only the current income but the capital appreciation is considered for use in determining the spending objectives. And I just put a final point as far as an endowment return objective is typically expressed as a spending rate as a percentage of total assets plus a cushion for expected inflation. Foundations, for example, have a return objective of oftentimes 5% plus CPI. So these are spending, return hurdles, which are often expressed by institutional investors. I'd like to move also to page 12, time horizon. Endowments are seen as a permanent source of funding, and as a consideration for that, the preservation of the corpus is an important consideration. And as a result, the time horizon is typically long term. But the risk tolerance can be a mitigating factor. And so for a institutional investor that has a very long-term investment horizon, an assessment needs to be made about the willingness to embark, to endure that short-term volatility which can accompany a long-term investment horizon. On page 13, another constraint is liquidity. An endowment typically has liquidity needs for current spending and any emergency needs that may arise, but there may also be some large outlays in the form of, for example, capital improvements that may require a higher level of levels of liquidity. And as I mentioned before, the legacy fund liquidity requirement is low for the next 5 years and is envisioned to be moderate thereafter. I was going to make some concluding comments, and I'll just kind of walk through these bullet points. As I mentioned, the challenge is maintaining current levels of spending, should there be any, with trying to preserve the purchasing power of the corpus over the long term. And Mr. Chair, you asked me about the asset allocation, my recommendations. I didn't come here with a specific recommendation for asset allocation. I really wanted to make just some general observations that I have as far as the consideration of other asset classes. And it's in my professional opinion that there is a role to be played by equities and some other asset classes. To what degree, I can't say. I believe it requires some detailed further study, but based on the in my professional experience and seeing institutional investment pools that have long horizons, there is typically accommodation for including other asset classes, such as equities, such as some alternative strategies, such as infrastructure, real estate, private equity, because that long horizon does it has some inflation hedging characteristics that aren't embedded in a pure fixed income investment portfolio. So I think there is a role for considering, the advisory board considering other asset classes, but I'm not here today to make a specific recommendation as far as the actual allocation that I would recommend.
Well, you know, I know you just come into this position, so I didn't expect you to either. I don't know about the rest of the committee, but I sure didn't have that expectation. But in your role as interim CIO, do you consider that to be a responsibility of yours to advise us on that, on how much to put into a growth component?
I think it would, my opinion is that, Mr. Chair, would be, I think this is an area that our general investment consultant, Callan Associates, has considerable experience in terms of providing asset allocation, asset liability studies that have very detailed modeling of you know, various scenarios as far as asset mixes and spending and funding requirements. I would certainly feel comfortable, you know, working with Callan on this project in terms of providing a study on this pool of assets, because I think their input is it would help this process.
Well, I don't know how much circumstances would change, you know, the circumstances of the last 6 months would change what their recommendation would be, but last fall or early winter, they and Mr. Geisinger were, you know, not even close on their recommendations. So it left me at least kind of wondering who to listen to. Representative Campanet.
Well, Mr. Chairman, and I guess, you know, this, one of the, and this is a troubling time to invest money. We just here, what was it, a month ago or 3 weeks ago, JP Morgan, you know, was hedging to not lose money and wound up losing a pretty good chunk of change, you know, and it goes on. That's one of the biggest problems of getting into any equity right now of, there's just, you know, the basically the models are kind of what was used in the past aren't working today, and that's what does, I think is the scary part about doing anything. And, you know, it kind of goes back to your one, that first bullet point on risk. You know, I guess what we know is how to maximize as much as we can out of what we're willing to do, I guess, is probably going to be the challenge for the near term here anyways with it. And, you know, like I said, I think we're going to have to, when the legislature convenes, I think we're going to have a good discussion with the body in whole and see where, you know, what kind of, because it, I'm with Representative Wyler that, you know, I don't think it's our job today to try to, I think it's our job to preserve it, and whatever happens we work with and let the cards fall where they may right now. It is.
Anything else, Mr. Hagmeyer?
Well, this may be getting into the discussion at 2:40, so, I mean, I can hold my comments off until then, but I did want to spend a couple minutes talking about my recent experience traveling with a group to Norway and listening to their very considerable legacy fund group and how they have managed their money and what they're managing it to. So I'd like to share a few of those thoughts at some point, which may get into what you're talking about in terms of asset class. You know, we've looked at before, we've looked at Wyoming and Alaska's plan. I don't think we'd ever looked out of the U.S. at all, but this to me was enlightening in terms of how they are looking at theirs and what they're doing with it. So at some point I'd like to spend just a couple minutes and talk about that.
So what time is it anyway? I don't believe it's
12:50.
Well, we're a little ahead of comments by interested parties. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add, Darren, before we get into that?
No, Mr. Chair, that concludes my prepared remarks.
Well, Mr. Hagmeyer, if you're ready to talk about that, why don't we for a while, and we'll take comments after a little while, in case someone is planning on coming at 2 or 10 after 2 or something like that.
Sure. And I can get handouts for you on this, but I just had the PowerPoint presentation sent to me today. But we visited with a fellow by the name of Dag Drydal, who is Global Head of External Relations for Norges Bank, and that is our equivalent of the Federal Reserve. They manage their pension fund, which is our legacy fund.
If I can just interrupt, Darren, you don't have to stand the whole time. You feel welcome to take a seat and let us know when you want to comment.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
And so as I mentioned, there was a group of us that went to Norway to look at their energy issues over there. And one of the presentations was this individual from Norges Bank talking about their fund, their pension fund, and they call it Norway's Government Pension Fund. And it is truly the equivalent of our legacy fund. They started this in 71 is when they put together their fund. They actually put together the governance issues around it in 91, didn't really expect to see any returns, any money go into the fund. But starting in 1996, they discovered oil, offshore oil. Earlier than that, they started putting money into their fund. Today, they have $638 billion in their legacy fund. And the idea of their legacy fund is almost identical to ours. It is for the benefit of future generations of Norwegians. And today, 10 to 15% of that gets set aside to fund government operations. So they use some of that to fund, you know, ongoing government, 10 to 15%. They have a bogey of 4% return today. But what I found very interesting.
40%?
Today, the 4% return is what they're looking at today.
Representative Wyler, go ahead.
You said 10 to 15% of what is it, of the principal balance, or is it of the interest?
Both.
Okay. And what money makes up that fund?
Well, they're taxation.
Is it just on oil?
Yeah, 50%. They have a very high rate of tax over there, as you can imagine. Yeah.
It's just yeah.
$638 billion. Yeah.
The government owns all the oil, pretty much, don't they?
Yes. Well, yeah. The big oil company over there is called Statoil, which now has touches North Dakota because they bought Brigham. Statoil is owned 67% by the Norwegian government. But here's one of the interesting things. I'm happy to send this presentation out to all of you. In fact, I can do that today. But their asset classes are three. 60% is going into equities. 35 to 40% is going into fixed income. And 5% is going into real estate. So they've obviously taken a much more aggressive stance than we have. So I thought you might find that interesting, Darren. It certainly is remarkable what they're doing over there. They have a really long-term vision for the country. And for, you know, this fund. And so they've got a very sophisticated modeling. They have asset managers, money managers, but they do a lot of it in-house within their bank. So I just wanted to share that with you, that this, to me, was very enlightening when I've looked at what, you know, that Alaska, Wyoming, all of them are putting some money into equities. And we were, at this point, we have it 100% invested in fixed income or bonds. And to your point, Representative Kepinich, who knows when it's a good time to invest? You know, it's always a little bit of a risk. So, I'm not advocating anything at this point, but I am, you know, just sharing with you some of the things that I found out in Norway. I thought it would be very useful for this committee. And so I can get you a more formal presentation of this. Maybe we can look at that at the next meeting after you've had a chance to look at it. But it was, to me, enlightening.
Well, if you could get that to Sarah, yeah, then she can send
I'll
it.
I'll do that.
And can have some time to review it,
yeah,
and that sort of thing. So,
Mr. Chairman.
President Kaepernick.
Mr. Chairman and Eric, is that the Norwegians, okay, you compared it to the Federal Reserve, but is that kind of private individuals that are making that, or are they government?
The government.
Okay. See, that's what, you know, you read the history, like the Alaska Fund, it didn't really do much when it was in the political process. That's how it kind of established that fund board, you know, and kind of removed it from the political process. Then they started getting a little more riskier on their investments and stuff, because I read Alaska, yeah, they're heavy, they don't have a lot of fixed income. It's mostly either that or real estate or cash. Or
one of the points that they made, Representative Kepinich, was that, you know, they put all the governance issues, all the investment guidelines in place in 91, and it sat there for 5 years and didn't invest a nickel. So they had a very long time to really think about how they wanted to invest it, how they wanted to structure their asset classes without any pressure of, oh, we got all this money, what are we going to do with it? And so they really had time to, you know, think about the long-term effects of it. And so I think, you know, we're kind of the same point. Yeah, we're seeing money come into it, but there's not going to be any money going out till 2017. And so I think one of the points that Representative Wilder made, I share completely with you, is I don't know why we're worried about that. I mean, I don't think that's our business to worry about what gets done with the money. The only thing that I would worry about is that in 2017, that we have liquidity in there, and I think the way it's structured, there's ample liquidity, that at most, and as I look at it, there's probably going to be around $3 billion in there by 2017. It's kind of a rough estimate, somewhere around $3 billion. So if you figure that they can spend the interest income off of that, you know, at that point, who knows where rates are going to be, but certainly there's going to be $40, $50 million available in interest off of that. 15% of the corpus at that point would be $450 million. So you'd have to have, you know, liquidity or access to liquidity of nearly $500 million. And I think that's the only thing that we would have to be worried about. But the way it's structured now, you've got all sorts of, you know, this is all liquid. So I think there's ample opportunity to revisit the asset classes and look at taking some additional risk, perhaps, but gaining some return as well.
Which the revisiting the asset classes was really part of our decision in December that that was our intention. But Representative Wilder.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eric, the 45 to 50 million, I know it's a ballpark figure, and if everything stays the way it is, some things will go up or down, but is that per year or per biennium?
Well, I'm not sure, Representative Wilder. You get to spend the interest income becomes available. Is it all of the interest that is accumulated?
It is all the interest and earnings from the legacy fund go in. They just roll into the general fund. They just automatically roll into the general fund.
Even the returns that are being earned now?
No.
Just for those biennia?
Correct. Everything that's being earned now goes into the fund and becomes part of the principal.
Okay.
And then in 2017, the interest and earnings from that point, I think it's July 1, 2017, from that point on, that interest and earnings rolls into the general fund.
So, Representative Waller, what I was thinking is that you probably have, you know, right now you got a return of 88 basis points or 1%. That's $30 million is what you'd have at 1%. If you're getting more than that, you know, obviously it would be
per year.
Per year.
And then, Mr. Chairman, one more, and I know this isn't for this committee, but you guys all know where I stand on this, and my concern is that the legislative process is going to take 15% out, or try as hard, some are going to try as hard as they can. If you take $450 million out in 2017, how does that affect the interest and earnings for the next biennium? Because there's $450 million less. So now, I mean, that just depletes your interest and earnings for the next biennium. So, I mean, that's...
Right. And, of course, you're going to be continuing to add, you know, into that for...
Right.
Perpetuity, as far as we know.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So does it become a philosophical question now? Do we make... Would you like to make this so, whatever the opposite of liquid is, that the legislature just about can't spend that 15% because they'll lose so much principal if they take it out early?
Well, Mr. Chairman, that's in the Constitution, so we can't. We can, obviously, and I know you know that, but we could certainly have a strong recommendation from this committee before the next legislative session. But again, nothing can be done until 2017 anyway. So this committee can wait till 2016 and then make a strong recommendation. But
I don't think I phrased that, not as far as our recommendation. But so we know we need enough money that's liquid to equal whatever the interest is in that biennia after 2017 to transfer over there. I think if I'm understanding you right, your worry is that it just becomes a normal policy to do a supermajority vote and take 15% of the principal.
Plus the interest that comes out.
Plus the interest. So, do we, as a committee, invest this so that if they take that, choose to take that 15%, that it's liquid and available without sustaining big losses by liquidating something that isn't ready? Or do we invest it in a way that it'll be such a big loss to them that it discourages them from making that decision to take 15%? And I, you know, I guess it's up to each of us how.
Well, if I guess, Mr. Chairman, you were looking at me and asking that question, I would certainly hope that we would stay away from investing this based on whether we want them to act one way or the other. We need to let the State Investment Board know, here's our risk tolerance, and I hate to keep it so simple, but this is where we are. Now you go do your job. And I mean, I don't want to invest this thinking that we're going to influence what the legislative body in 2017 is going to do. I think that's, I would hope we'd stay away from that.
Is part of clarifying a risk tolerance that we say we have to have 15% of that amount liquid at that time, as opposed to that it doesn't have to be, it can be something that is not going to reach a maturity until 2030. But isn't that part of clarifying a risk tolerance?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I don't know that I completely understand your question, but I think that what's going to happen, and you know, we all know that there are going to be those that are going to say, no matter what happens, they're going to want 15% to come out. I don't think how we choose to advise those that are going to invest this, I don't think we can structure it or influence it in any way that's going to keep those people from saying we want 15% of the principal also. I don't think we're going to be able to do that, unfortunately. Let's just hope we have enough people in 5 years that, I mean, this fund was set up to have a, for future generations, like, you know, like Mr. Hardmeyer talked about. That's what it was for, to, so that there's interest in earnings from this fund that would benefit future generations. I hope it grows to be as big as the one in Alaska does, at a quicker rate. But once we start tapping into the principal, then it's a downhill slide, and this thing will be gone before my grandkids ever see the light of day.
I think whatever is taken in 2017 or 19 or whenever the first time principal comes out will become the standard.
You're right.
Well,
Representative Kampanek.
Mr. Chairman, I hope that that we have that what we know at the time that we know it. I hope that's what the future does too, because if they don't, I don't see how we're going to protect the future when we don't have any control on it. Because there's games, you know, can get played however we do stuff. I mean, and you brought up one of them. You know, they can play games on the 230s if they really wanted to. You know, I mean, because after 7 years, even if it is in the Constitution, even if it wasn't a stated measure, it gets to be very interesting to see what.
All that being said, Mr. Chairman,
the reason for the 15%, and I hate to keep going back to when this was all set up, but the reason for the ability to get at the 15% was if we get in a situation down the road where we have an emergency, we have a disaster, we really need the money, then it's there and that's great and it should be used. But When the money is rolling in this state like it is now, another 15% out of the legacy fund is more want than need. There's a big difference between wants and needs, and I would hope that in 2017 they figure that out.
Chairman, and this is where...
President Kaepernick, go ahead.
Committee, I think this is where this next legislature's going to have to look at, is kind of get some type of, you know, legislative policy to put in, where, you know, granted, you can't bind the next session, but like with this, you could to a certain extent, because it does become, I think the discussion's going to have to be, is length, because time makes money too, you know, and stuff on it, and that's one of the things that we're looking at too, but I don't think this committee can do it, but I think going, you know, we talked about when we first were investing this on the ladder type approach.
You know, where if you did start that up and you had five-year increments or three-year increments as it came in and invested, you know, it is going to kick it out over past 2017, that not all the principal is going to be available, you know, and I think that's what's, I think there's going to have to be a little longer-term strategy than the 2017, you know, to invest this. I think that's one of the things this committee really isn't cared, I mean, it really, we're just looking at 2017, but I think the next session's going to have to look at this a little, in a little longer term, and it's kind of like what Eric said about the Norwegians, you know, and that's, we got kind of the luxury of 5 years here of just letting this thing, you know, brew, you know, I mean, and I think that's what, I don't think we want to rush into anything, you know, get, but I think we do need to have, you know, a broader body that, because we are, you know, we are suspicious of what the future's going to hold on, you know, it's kind of like a trust fund, a kid hits 21 and all of a sudden, you know, 2 years later, it's gone, you know, I mean, and, you know, we're kind of thinking in that type of mentality too, and I don't think that, I don't think that's going to be a reality either. There might be some people that try, but to come up with a two-thirds majority even in 5 years, unless this state really changes, which I'm not saying it couldn't, but I don't think you're going to find two-thirds of legislators to tap this to start with anyways. I don't know.
Okay, it's about 2:10 now, and that's the time we had designated for comments from other persons who might be in attendance. So let's open it up for that. Does anyone have comments that hasn't had a chance yet? If not, we'll go back to our committee discussion. Ms. Fong, you've been quiet. Ms. Shark. maybe Representative Kaepernick has been in my way and I didn't see you flailing your arms.
Mr. Chairman, I think it's been a good discussion. And I think it's always good to, you know, to get some background on investing. I'm not sure what the goal was today, if we were going to, you know, start talking about any changes we want to make or just to get some background information and at the next meeting, see if we have any changes or if we need to review. We still need to do some changes to our budget stabilization policy, I believe. We haven't changed that one yet, have we?
We didn't take an official action that changed it, but I think as we dug into it and learned about the process last year, I think it changed a lot just by mm-hmm. working on it, and I think we have a better fund now probably than we did before, all that thought and consideration.
We need to take action at some point to change our budget stabilization policy?
We can.
Yeah.
I don't think we have to, but it's sure something that we definitely need to consider, because that is our mission. And so you said you didn't know really what the plan, how far we wanted to get today. My thought was, A, we wanted to meet Darren and find out what's going on in that office and the plan for choosing a new CIO and that sort of thing. And so we've done that. I kind of refresh ourselves on how we're doing so far, how this investment has been developing, and really get to thinking about it. And also, if for example, either on the legacy fund or the budget stabilization fund, you or anybody else have a particular thing in mind that you'd like investigated, that's what they're here for, is to help advise us, one of the things they're here for. But it is their role. And so if somebody has a concept in mind or something like that, or a direction you'd like investigated, I think we need to let them know so that at the next meeting they're not coming in and then one or more of us are disappointed because they didn't look into a particular avenue. Representative Wyatt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Perhaps you can refresh my memory, because I don't remember when it was the last time that we met, but we did take some action.
In mid-December, we set the policy on the legacy fund.
Right.
And very generally, the policy was to invest the money as it's coming in into an income fund, and that we would let that develop for a while and then come back and look at a potential growth fund as part of it.
So that is, Mr. Chairman, that is currently what's going on. I mean, it's...
Right, it's essentially going into bonds.
Right, right. We don't need to take any further action for that to continue.
No. And by not addressing it, think my understanding of reviewing those pages that were sent out, basically that's pretty much what's going on with the Budget Stabilization Fund as well, although I think it's a little shorter term bonds than what the legacy fund is buying.
But
and he's nodding his head, so I think I explained it right.
Okay, so but had we done nothing back in December, it would still be at the Bank of North Dakota earning a very minimal...
Mr. Hardmeyer would be building on to accommodate all the cash.
It depends on your definition of minimal.
Well, what I mean is, and I didn't mean... I knew as soon as I said that, there you go. There you go again, Wyler. Are you going to build up or are you going to build out?
Oh.
Better views if you go up, though. But you probably can't anymore, huh?
No, we can't.
All right.
He was going to start charging us is what was going to happen.
Yeah, keep your money safe. That's right.
Senator Dotsenrod, did you have anything that I maybe...
Just, Mr. Chairman, under the heading of just general discussion, I do think that we should anticipate that as we get into the years, out years of 2017 and so on, there will be groups and there will be people that will come organized to try to get some particular cause funded with out of the legacy fund. But I think they're going to have to make an extremely compelling case, with the state having still on the receiving end, the state subdivision county still on the receiving end of the 70% that doesn't go to the legacy fund, that revenue still coming in, to try to build a case that they need something beyond that 70% is going to be very... I think they're going to have a... I just don't really see, and that may happen, but there will be certainly be an effort made on some organizations and for some causes. But I think that the general nature of why this legacy fund was established, and a pretty good understanding that it was set aside for the future, I think I don't anticipate to see much of that 15% used or taken out. I wanted to mention that part, that I don't really see us, and but we're getting way kind of beyond what we can influence anyway. But as far as the way that we approach the policy and the directives on how the asset allocation of the fund, my thought was that I was in complete agreement that we needed to get a policy in place that was fairly stable and conservative and low risk. But I did anticipate at the same time that we would, over a period of time, maybe a year to 2 years out, begin to change to see maybe a 10% to 20% of the dollars in this fund go into some sort of equity type investment of some kind. And that may or may not happen. But if we're in committee discussion about how we envision this to change over time, that would be sort of the general idea I had, is yes, it'll be conservative, it'll be predominantly what we have now, but that there will begin to start to see some, a small share of it, go into equities at some point down the road, a year or two. That's all I had to...
Ms. Strombeck, we're not leaving you out of the discussion, are we?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Well, I have a couple questions I want to ask Darren about the investments we have now. So if you'd come back up. As I recall, and I didn't look back, know exactly what it is, on this income portion, it seems to me we were looking at bonds of up to like an 8 or 10 year maturity. And so I look at this, and there's something I just don't understand, and I'm looking for an example of these. You know, but some of these have a maturity date of like in the 2030s or 2040s, but then there's this effective duration of 1.5 or something like that. Can you explain what effective duration is and how it is that we have these that are decades away in maturity based on what we had decided in our policy in December?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, effective duration is the present value of the all future cash flows, the cash flows being interest as well as principal, expressed in years. Each of these cash flows are weighted by the years in which it occurs, and that effective duration is a weighted average of all of these cash flows that are projected to be received as part of that investment. You can oftentimes see a wide discrepancy between the effective duration and weighted average life is usually occurs when you have a amortizing loan, such as a mortgage. And I don't know in particular which investment you're referring to.
No one particular that I'm referring to.
Okay. Yeah, the weighted average life is...
What page am I on?
Well, there's J.P. Morgan, F and FG.
I'm on some that where Babson is the manager,
mm-hmm.
and it is DBUBS Mortgage Trusts, and it's got a maturity date of 11/10 of 2045. And an effective duration of 3.23.
Well, in the case of the, Mr. Chair, the case of a mortgage, there is, a prepayment component. There may be a mortgage within a pool that has maybe a 30-year fixed maturity mortgage. However, that prepayment option can shorten the effective duration. And when looking at effective duration of a mortgage, there are assumptions made as far as the prepayment of that loan, depending sometimes in the case of a mortgage, 30-year mortgage, you may have a high coupon mortgage, which has a 30-year mortgage, for example, that could have a high prepayment risk because of the borrower may choose to refinance, and so that can shorten the effective duration of a mortgage, to give you an example. So that the guidelines, Mr. Chair, that we gave our two managers, JP Morgan and Babson, the goal is for them to construct a fixed income portfolio that has an overall effective duration between 0 and 3 years, and the specific guidelines we pull out for each manager to give you an idea. Let's see. In the case of JP Morgan, we give them a duration guideline of a weighted average effective duration that will typically remain within plus or minus 30% of the benchmark, which in the case of JP Morgan, that is the Barclays Capital 1-to-3-year government credit index. And I'm looking here to see if we have given them a constraint as far as the maturity date of the individual instruments. I don't see one offhand.
Well,
and Mr. Chair, in the case of Babson, we give them an average duration target of between 0 and 3 years on the overall portfolio. Tony, did we give them guidelines as far as the maximum maturity of individual issues? I don't see anything in the guidelines.
I don't think so.
Okay, let me go to a different question on this report. Total assets are just over $353 million, which is the total of the market values. So is that the value as of May 31st of these investments, or is that what we put in?
That, Mr. Chair, that is the current market value of the legacy fund as of May 31st.
So that's the amount that we put into it plus the returns plus those 353.
Mr. Chair, the interest earnings plus capital appreciation above and beyond the actual deposits made into the legacy fund.
Well, and I'm looking for comments on this. Here's what I'm thinking as we go here. We could probably address that budget stabilization fund. Right now it's just started being addressed based on the fact of, I think, what we did with the legacy fund, and since we didn't address it, you're kind of doing a similar pattern. So if at the next meeting, if we want to adopt a policy regarding the budget stabilization fund, is the policy that we are currently operating on for the legacy fund what we want for that? That is certainly a much more liquid fund. So maybe just what we have is what needs to be adopted. And then as we move forward with a potential growth portion of the legacy fund, I think we should be getting some guidance from you and some opinions. And like I said, I didn't expect it today, so don't feel like, at least I'm sitting here disappointed. And you know, whether you base your recommendations to us on your own instincts and the people around the office and your own knowledge, or rely more heavily on Callan, I guess that's up to you. But you're the one who we have as someone to advise us as we pursue our decisions. So that's something that you need to be working on, and based on whatever you choose to base it on. But we'll need some recommendations, I think, from you.
Well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Campanet,
do we want to look into any more too on, you know, I thought going forward, you know, we keep using, you know, and that's one of the things too, but that's what always spooks, you know, we don't have our eggs and all in one basket per se investment, but the people we're getting advice from, you know, is kind of in one basket. And do we have any, is there any willingness to look within the state of small portions of investments? You know, say we take, you know, when we start down this, because I think Senator Dossman runs right, you know, that's what I kind of had in mind too, is I'd like to see this thing, you know, we got 5 years, we can get some strategy put together over that period of time. But it would be kind of nice to see, you know, that we did take a portion of, you know, and whether it's 5% or something, you know, that could get to be a big number too, that we pull people within the state of, you know, investment people within the state, you know, give them a shot at investing for us too, you know, on it.
It's one of the things we had talked about in December.
I know, that's what I mean, is I wanted to get that on the record, basically, again, because I think it has some merit. I do, you know, that I think they would probably take, you know, we're just not just a file number then either, and see what happens, set some benchmarks that way.
But as we move forward, everything's on the table. Representative Wyler? Anything else for the good of the order? Any questions you have for us as far as our expectations as we get ready to move forward?
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, are you looking for a specific recommendation at the next advisory board meeting as it relates to asset allocation? I'd like to get some clarification as if that's the directive I'm being charged with.
I'm not even sure of the numbers anymore, but I think this will be close. I think last fall, Callan was recommending, you know, a growth component of like 60-65%, something like that. And I think Mr. Geisinger mentioned something about like 10%. Again, don't quote me on the numbers for sure, but it was about that far apart. And so, for me as a committee member with not a lot of investment experience, I'm sitting there thinking, well, which is it? So I think whether we choose to follow it or not then is up to us, but I do think that you should be coming in with at least some kind of a range of what you think is proper and how you would invest that range and some, you know, the pros and cons of doing more or doing less, and just give us some advice that we can weigh into our decision-making process. Does anyone feel differently than that, or any other comments for Darren to weigh in? Anything else for the good of the order? One last chance for anyone, any other comments from others?
Well, Mr. Chairman, just before cabinet. We leave here, you know, Chairman gave you kind of a for the next meeting, but I really do think that we should start getting something put together for this next session, for these, you know, on investment, you know, on what we're, you know, and what you think where we kind of, you know, kind of have some outlines, because I really do think we're going to have, for any major policy changes, I think we're going to have to run it through the, well, I know we'll have to run it through the legislature, and that way I think we get some longer term direction maybe on this too, but I think with the players involved, we've got Eric and Pam and you know, I think that's what we're really going to have to look at, because I think, like I said, that 5 years is going to go faster than the person realizes too. And I think we've kind of talked. You know, I don't think this committee is more of looking at the investment side of it and just trying to keep everything together. But I think we should have some stuff. Probably start working on trying to get something for the next session, you know, on asset. Well, we're going to do this asset allocation, but I think on what we can realistically expect too. Because I think there's people out there got some eye in the sky ideas on what this is going to produce too and stuff. So I think we need to bring reality into play to a certain extent too.
Anything else? Well, thank you everybody for your. Representative Wyler?
Mr. Chairman. One thing that I hope that this committee will do prior to the next legislative session is, I know that we make recommendations and we can, does this committee have the ability to put out a bill? I mean, just like all the other committees, interim committees do? Do we have the...
I don't know why we couldn't. Okay. I don't know that there's anything...
We just hope that we could...
We have to check on that. I think... you could recommend it, but, you know, your responsibilities are to make recommendations to the State Investment Board on the investments. I'd have to do some checking on if we could run a bill through, like, legislative management, but I'll check on that for the next meeting.
Because I would like to maybe take a shot at changing the makeup of this committee as well, after this year. Maybe have a, just a member of the public be on the committee, who may or may not, that person may or may not have been a former legislator, I don't know, but something.
Lila, why don't you work on just getting the basis for a bill down by staying in touch with Alan about whether there's some reason why a committee can't make a recommendation of a bill? I thought pretty much all committees could recommend something, whether it's the recommendation's accepted or not. But, okay.
There's some other ideas.
Well, there's legislators on here.
If nothing else, though, again, thank you all for, I think, a good job, well done up to this point. And we'll get something put together for a future meeting. And thank you for your summer afternoon. We're adjourned.